listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, serving Kingston and its greater area proudly.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, December 5th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. With an eye on supporting education, waterfront activity, and tourism, Council unanimously voted at their last meeting on Tuesday to explore options to waive or discount dockage fees at city-operated marinas and ports, specifically for vessels that contribute to community and tourism events or that offer free educational or public programming. The motion brought forward by Councillor Don Amos specifically references the tall ship St. Lawrence II, based out of Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. The ship, which calls Kingston's waterfront home, offers hands-on experiential education programs. Chris Chafe, Executive Director of Tallship Expeditions Canada Brigantine, came before Council to speak on behalf of the program and its impact.
Over the years, our community has grown increasingly distant from the water as a result of ever-compounding barriers to access. Even low-barrier avenues have become prohibitively expensive and are often viewed as not for them by some economically disadvantaged and racialized Kingstonians. Half the youth we serve have never been on the water. This is a trend we want to see reversed by breaking down those barriers and enabling access for underserved members of our community. The lake isn't just a pretty backdrop. It isn't just a racetrack for wealthy sailors, nor is it a fishing pond for the well-to-do. The lake is the biggest public space we have and should be available to everyone. We've made an offer to staff to operate a barrier-free sailing and water access program to the community, as well as to open a boater and education space available to boaters and visitors at POH and the community more broadly in the past OLS location. The city recently made a sizable investment in that space to support the sleeping cabin project, which has now been sitting vacant for 2 years. We are offering the opportunity to breathe new life into a space by opening it to the public. It's been difficult for us to understand the city's position on mooring fees. All the ports we visit, Thunder Bay, St. John's, New York City, Halifax, Yananaque, over a month in Lunenburg, all of these spaces were provided free of charge, and they were very happy to have us there, right, to open up the boat, to have youth engage with the ship. The only exception seems to be Kingston.
City staff are already in the process of reviewing Portsmouth Olympic Harbor as part of a broader visioning process. That work is focused on aligning site uses with Kingston's waterfront, supporting sailing, water sports, community access, and other opportunities. In bringing the motion forward, Councillor Amos pointed to the role tall ships and other specialty vessels play in strengthening Kingston's tourism profile, supporting waterfront activity, and fostering community pride. He also noted that other Canadian ports and marinas, such as Halifax and St. John's, already have programs in place that waive or reduce docking fees for educational and charitable vessels in recognition of their public value.
If you think of the 1800s, our waterfront was plastered with these type of ships, and now we don't have that. We don't have this type of ship that's coming into our ports very often, and this is a tourism opportunity for us. This is an opportunity for people to come out onto the dock, jump on the boat, see what a tall ship is about, and it's done for free. So it's something that our downtown tourism can sink their teeth into. It's something that if you're new to Kingston, if you're new to the country, and you're not familiar with the tall ships, you can see one that's actually working. And then any youth who has any sort of curiosity about our water and wants to see what a tall ship is about, what a great opportunity to come down with your family and have a tour of the boat and see what it's about. This, as we heard from our delegation today, that boat travels all over Eastern Ontario, well, all over Ontario, really, Lake Ontario, and then through the Atlantic Ocean from New York City to Halifax and everywhere along the eastern seaboard. This is an opportunity for us to really lean into our tall ship experience here in Kingston. This is its home dock. This is an opportunity for us to really bring something forward where the public can enjoy it and Kingston can take pride in it. You heard the captain speak. He is now going to be going through Tourism Kingston, and it'll be representing us at other ports. We need to embrace at our end its home port and what we can do for it. We are a city that says we thrive on history and innovation. History is here, and we have an opportunity to support it and let it thrive.
With council support, city staff are set to report back to council in the second quarter of 2026, with options for implementing fee waivers or cost reductions at city-operated marinas, along with an analysis of the financial costs and benefits to the city. At their last meeting on Tuesday, council voted to move forward with an expansion of support for heritage property owners, addressing an issue that's been growing across Kingston and the province. Changes made in 2023 to the Ontario Heritage Act shifted municipalities away from using listing as a long-term tool to protect heritage properties. As a result, many municipalities moved to formally designate previously listed properties before protections were lost. This has led to a sharp increase in heritage designations over the past 2 years. At the same time, the insurance industry has entered what's known as a hard market, with rising premiums linked to increasing environmental disasters. In this climate, some heritage property owners have reported difficulty securing insurance or facing higher premiums. While the province maintains that heritage designation alone should not affect insurance, in Kingston, a growing number of property owners have raised concerns about affordability and access to insurance. In some cases, this has resulted in council opting not to designate a property or, in one case, repealing an existing designation. These concerns led to a motion in August 2025 when council called on the province and insurance companies to explain why some heritage-designated properties were facing higher premiums or denied coverage altogether. When the report on the issue returned to council on Tuesday, Councillor Brandon Tozzo asked for an update on the city's outreach efforts.
Insurance costs have been such a challenge, I know, for some of our heritage properties. Have we had any movement from the province on this, of dealing with this? Because the report doesn't really speak to any discussions from the province on their end of doing anything about the insurance industry.
We haven't received any further information from the province related to this. There has been a little bit of movement from the National Trust of Canada, which has set up a new a support program for heritage properties as it relates to insurance.
That update came alongside a new set of recommendations from staff focused on expanding financial support for heritage property owners. The report recommended doubling the budget for the Heritage Property Grant Program to $200,000 per year, starting in 2026, and developing a new zero-interest loan program to help cover larger and more costly conservation and restoration projects. In addition, the report recommends exploring options for improving heritage protections, especially in rural Kingston. With unanimous support from Council, staff are set to act on these recommendations and report back in late 2026. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the challenges the insurance issue has created and expressed hope that expanded financial support will help ease the pressure for heritage property owners.
This has been a very difficult time and a very difficult topic to manage. And I think that what you're proposing is thoughtful. I think it's helpful and it supports what we value so much here in Kingston. So no questions for you. I'm well aware of all the issues that we're trying to navigate, but I appreciate the approach and the care that's been taken.
While uncertainty remains without clear action from the province, the city is moving forward with local solutions. This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear Campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so the last year we made a two-year commitment, and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you could also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory in Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me, and 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas, and she had received a bear, and they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that, and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear," it was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings, but no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So, so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we do the new release. But we get suggestions all the time, a lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queen's buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queen's, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, you know, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queen students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a Broom Factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, Prue, so lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is, you know, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has like a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like, people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, it's a very close-knit community. And so, yeah, we get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building, though, because... yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah, so on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, you know, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, you know, they tend to sell out pretty fast, but it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the Hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
You also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah. So the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe. It could be a retail shop. It could be your dentist. It could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jim McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, December 5th, daytime high of minus 5 with a 60% chance of snow throughout the day. Going to feel like minus 11 with the wind chill. Saturday, December 6th, daytime high of minus 2, overnight low of minus 10 with periods of snow throughout the day. Sunday, December 7th, daytime high of minus 3, feeling closer to 0, so a little warmer than the days before it. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, December 8th, a mix of sleet and freezing rain on the morning of December 8th, high of minus 4, low of minus 7, so it's going to be chilly and there is going to be precipitation. Might be worthwhile doing a school bus watch. Keep your eye on the tri-board for any announcements of bus cancellations. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it. During January and February, however, overnight on-street parking will not be permitted, no matter the weather conditions. So once again, these restrictions go in effect December 1st and will last until April 1st. Here are some relevant road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news.
Council has voted unanimously to review Kingston's property standards bylaws, responding to a steady stream of complaints from residents about troubling and sometimes messy neighbor disputes. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Jimmy Hassan, directs city staff to report back to council on opportunities to improve public awareness and understanding of the city's bylaws and potential refinements to existing bylaws to enhance property standards requirements.
I will make it simple and easy and clear. The motions it's I want to bring forward to help those in our community, in our city, who has a small issues with their neighbors. Over 3 years, I have heard a lot complaints from my district resident about those issues. And we have required the help from the bylaws and sometime with the police too. And I came to learn that is so many small things which bylaw or the police cannot resolve because of we don't have enough forcing bylaws for those issues. But I just want to ask my colleagues to support this motion to just allow the staff to look at what else we can look into deeply to these bylaws, which we can make more usable and have a little bit more power delegated to our bylaw to resolve those issues between to the neighbors before instead of going to the courts and, you know, just making a good neighborhood with each other and behaving with each other and taking care of our responsibility as a responsible citizen and a responsible resident of Kingston, instead just poking each other and, you know, making uncomfortable their neighbors.
Other councillors confirmed they hear these complaints too. Garbage left out, feeding wildlife, unkempt yards, and other conditions that spill over onto neighboring properties. A clarification came from Councillor Brandon Tozzo, who seconded the motion, stressing that the city will not be pulled into just any dispute.
I think as councillors, we often get criticisms of people who just don't like their neighbor and they want to sick the city on them. I think we're all pretty familiar with that. Yes, I'm just seeing some heads nodding. So to be very clear to the community for expectations, if your neighbor is like, you know, has a house that's falling apart and causing a whole bunch of rats going there, and objectively, this is terrible, we're going to get involved. If you don't like your neighbor, we're not going to get, that's not our job.
In his closing remarks, Councillor Hassan underscored that the motion aims to encourage good neighbor behavior and provide clarity on property standards bylaws.
And I hope the staff will look into no matter what is in municipal jurisdictions and bring those changes to the bylaw and give a little bit more power to our bylaw enforcement team to resolve those issues, whether just talking to them or take other measures in place.
With the motion passing unanimously, staff will report back in Q2 2026 with information and recommendations on public education strategies, existing bylaws, and enforcement options. At their last meeting, council voted to implement a 15% user fee for recreation facility programming, room bookings, and facility rentals, along with a 72-hour registration delay for recreation programming for people who are not Kingston residents. These changes were proposed by staff following a motion introduced in February by Councillor Paul Shaves, who asked staff to explore non-resident user fees.
Municipalities implement non-residential fees to ensure fairness, cost recovery, and long-term sustainability in local services and amenities and programming. I brought forward this motion for the main basis that our residents do subsidize our facilities through the property taxes, not just user fees.
staff returned with three recommendations: the 15% non-resident user fee, the 72-hour registration delay, and a 15% non-resident fee for city commuter parking permits. While most counselors supported the first two recommendations, Counselor Lisa Osanek raised concerns about the additional parking fees.
The third clause is that 15% non-resident user fee for the commuter parking permits. And that's not only the street parking for commuter permits, but also for our city parking lots, like the Anglin parking lot and all the courthouse parking lot, all the others. And I think that that's unfair to, you know, the people coming into Kingston for employment purposes.
Counselor Connie Glenn went a step further, voicing equity concerns about the resident user fee as well.
So I have some concerns about the equity piece of this. I actually don't have trouble with the delay and allowing our own residents to have first opportunity at this and for them to fill up as many spaces as possible and then to open it up. That to me seems fair. The extra fee I struggle with. Recreation is critically important. Small communities do struggle with this. And essentially, if there's empty spots, then we've got people coming in from other municipalities that are helping to actually support those services, if you want to look at it from that perspective. So I have trouble with option one for that reason and for the reasons that Councillor Osanek has brought up. So I don't think that I can support this in this form. It's not, it doesn't work for me.
Mayor Brian Patterson countered this, arguing the proposed changes increase fairness across the board.
I see that differently. I don't think that this is a matter of controlling the space in our facilities. I think this is about recognizing that facilities cost a lot of money to construct and to maintain. And right now, that is borne entirely by the Kingston taxpayer. So the test that I use is, can I explain this to a resident of Loyalist Township, or could I explain this to a resident of South Frontenac, or could I explain this to a resident of Gananoque or wherever else? I personally feel I could absolutely explain why we're asking non-residents to pay a little bit more. If they want to construct a facility, then by all means, they're welcome to do that. But I'm going to guess that it's probably advantageous for them to be able to use our facilities. And so this is not an exorbitant increase in that fee. I think it's really just a matter of treating people fairly.
In the end, council voted on each recommendation separately. The first two passed, but the parking fee was struck down. These changes are set to take effect in 2026. Another first-of-its-kind innovation from Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queen's University. A new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool is changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma, a uniquely difficult-to-study and aggressive form of brain cancer. Neurosurgeon scientists and assistant professors Dr. James Persner and Dr. Teresa Persner, along with Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews, designed and patented a 3D surgical biopsy capsule, a tool used to take small tissue samples from brain tumors with precision. Published recently in the journal Operative Neurosurgery, this breakthrough has the potential to transform how brain tumors are studied and treated. Potential applications include more targeted radiation treatments, more precise and safer surgical decision-making, and new drug development informed by the most comprehensive molecular profiles of glioblastoma to date. Dr. Teresa Persner and engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews sat down to share more about the development of this innovative tool.
Well, to get started, glioblastoma, it's incredibly complex. I was wondering if you could describe what makes this cancer so uniquely difficult to study.
Yeah, it's a really, of all the cancers that I've tried to study, including pediatric and adult brain cancers, for me, it's by quite a margin the most difficult one to tackle, to even conceive of how we start tackling, let alone to tackle. And there's a few reasons for that. So first of all, it's really heterogeneous. So it's made up of many different types of populations of cells. And unfortunately, we've shown that those different types of cells can actually convert between each other. And so you can think you're trying to find a target that you target with a drug. If that target can change at any time in response to your drug, it makes it very difficult. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that it's already all over the brain at the time of diagnosis. So if you look at an MRI, you see this round, bright circle, which is the tumor. But we know that back, a long time ago, in the early days of neurosurgery, they actually took out the entire half of the brain that had the tumor in it, and it still came back on the other side of the brain. So it means that it's disseminated at diagnosis. And while, you know, there's this protective barrier in the brain called the blood-brain barrier that stops drugs and, you know, and toxins and bad things from getting into the brain. So it's good for your brain health. But when you're trying to get drugs into the brain, it prevents it from getting there. So where that big primary tumor is, that barrier is broken down. But for the rest of the brain, it's still very much intact. And so those are sort of the three reasons why this is just an incredibly difficult cancer to fight.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps this will be more for Caitlin, but I was wondering if you could explain in simple terms what this new 3D printed biopsy capsule is and what kind of impact it's going to have on research and treatment.
Absolutely. So as you said, it's a small 3D printed capsule. And the way it kind of works is that it adapts to the tip of pre-existing surgical suction. And then there's a little piston on the inside. And so when the suction's applied, the piston gets pulled up and that traps a sample of brain in the capsule itself. We can actually correlate our sample locations to the preoperative scans through intraoperative neuronavigation. So we can mark each point where the samples are taken from, and it's fully self-contained. So there's no cross-contamination between the samples at all. There's no risk of it damaging. It holds the integrity of the sample together. And that allows us to have like a very clear picture of that exact precise sample location going forward for research, which anyone who does genomics or transcriptomics research understands is very important. The more information we have and the less risk of contamination, the better our sample quality. And so all these factors together really let us have a very precise view of the different regions of the tumors that we're interested in, which is something that we haven't been able to really do easily with standard technologies. It could be done in not the safest ways, which obviously patient priority is our safety, or is our priority. Patient safety is our priority. But it allows us to safely capture all these samples in a quick and efficient way. That's not too much of a stress for the surgical team. So always the goal is shortest operation possible with as little risk to the patient as possible.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys already using this in your research right now?
Yeah, so we've used it in two patients so far. In our publication, we had a clinical validation where we used it versus the standard of care in a human glioblastoma tumor. And we've since also used it for other cases, and we're hoping to expand its use through the next year.
Mm-hmm. And I know the process of getting something patented is quite a journey. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that, how it all kind of began and how your team ended up here where you're now using this in research.
Yeah, I think it is. So device development can be a really long and arduous journey, especially getting it from concept to human. And so we were just very thoughtful from the very beginning on how we developed it, so that we developed it in a way that would ultimately be safe for human use. And acceptable from an ethics perspective. So from the very beginning, when we were designing the capsule itself, we took into account things like, you know, are these FDA approved materials? Are we creating it in a way that is very simple and easy to use with humans? And then when it came to IP, you know, what is the IP landscape? Are there devices out there that are very similar to ours that would preclude us from eventually filing a patent? And so from the very initial design steps, we took into account the eventual commercialization and the human readiness of the materials we were using. And so we got to human use very, very quickly, I think, because the end goal was embedded in the very initial design process.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it means for Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queens to kind of be at the center of this global first innovation?
I think it's great. Yeah. I think Kingston's a small town in a lot of regards, right? And so Queens kind of, you know, it punches above its weight with Queens. And so whenever we can sort of raise a flag and say, hey, we're doing something innovative and novel, it just puts us on the global stage. And so I think it's great. And I think that the more innovation we can do, the more, you know, kind of first that we can do, it also creates greater confidence in the patient population that they're going somewhere that has all the technology and all the resources and expertise required to receive, you know, exceptional care. And for me, at the end of the day, I love science. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of my whole job is doing science. But I'm here for the patients, right? And to build that confidence in them and to see their confidence in us and our program from a clinical perspective, but also an innovation perspective, it's very gratifying.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Caitlin, since you're still a student, how does it feel to, you know, have this tool that you worked on being out there?
Yeah, it's definitely been a really interesting experience to be a part of. The tool development all started during my undergrad. I've been at Queen's for far too long now. And getting to see it move through the stages at the speed that it did, to now having used in patients, it's really been an amazing experience, to be honest. And it's an amazing team to have worked with, everyone from Jamie and Teresa, who are obviously like the spearheads of campaigning for it and helping with its development and providing all the user feedback, to even the other neurosurgeons. So in the early stages, when we were doing preclinical validation, we had the neurosurgery team here compare, as well as grad students, between the standard of care tools and our novel tool using porcine brain as our model. And so getting everybody's actual feedback from not just Jamie and Teresa, but the actual, like every member of the neurosurgery team here, is a really unique opportunity. So it's been super interesting to be a part of, and I'm super grateful for the opportunity to have taken part in it.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, you're building those partnerships with other hospitals, hoping to get this tool out there. What are your hopes for the next few years in this department?
I mean, so the tool was developed to do science, right? We didn't develop the tool because we just wanted a tool. We wanted a tool so that we could access tissue in a way and with a granularity and precision that wasn't otherwise possible. And so now the next 5 years, part of it will be, you know, if other people want the tool, more than happy to share it. We create it in a way where it's 30 cents a capsule, and we can literally send off an email to another institution. They can print it off. And we actually did that. We tried it with SickKids, and they printed off some of our capsules, right? So it's extremely mobile, and we'd be delighted to share it with anyone. But what I'm really excited about is now the science that will come out of it. So it's kind of a little bit TBD. We'll see what happens, but that it was built to do science, not just to be a tool in itself.
Once again, that was neurosurgeon scientist Dr. Teresa Persner and Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews on a new 3D printed surgical biopsy tool changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma. As Persner and Andrews mentioned, the capsule is already being used in operating rooms at KHSC, making Kingston the only medical center in the world currently using this new tool. As for what comes next, the Kingston team is now building partnerships with other hospitals across Ontario to expand its reach. Work is also underway to build a state-of-the-art tissue bank facility that can store samples from patients across Canada, positioning Kingston as a global hub for brain tumor research. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Tonight, catch a Miss Emily Christmas at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 7:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event. Moving into the weekend, tomorrow on Saturday at the Grad Club, it's Holiday Spice Drag Fundraiser, bringing a sparkle for a great cause. Also on Saturday, it's the Holiday Sociable with East Coast Experience at the Cove Inn starting at 7 p.m. The Kingston Choral Society has their Christmas party at the Spire gathering at 7 p.m. and it's karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it's become an annual community highlight. It's Clem's 9th annual Country Christmas Warm Clothing Roundup at the RCHA. This event runs from 1 to 5 p.m. and supports neighbors, local artists, and of course, the holiday spirit. Stars on Ice comes to Slush Puppy Place starting at 4 p.m. And as always, the best way to wrap up this week is with karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. As for concerts this weekend, lots going on Friday, December 5th at the Broom Factory at Zoo Station, bringing a full U2 Zoo TV experience starting at 8 p.m. At the Grand Theatre, it's a Buble Christmas with vocalist Jay Davis starting at 7:30 p.m. At Hotel Wolf Island, a must-see is the Oscar Evans Group playing at 6:30, mixing jazz, soul, and modern groove. And at the Coven, it's the Holiday Primer with the Plaid Bastards featuring Jeff Kaleri, Wade Foster, and Sean McGallo, starting at 6 p.m. Moving into the weekend, the vibes do not stop there. On Saturday, it's Tommy Youngstein at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. Known for covers of Springsteen, Fleetwood Mac, and other classic rock, it's always a great turnout. At the Kingston Grand Theatre, Danu brings world-class Irish traditional music to Kingston, and it's perfect for the holiday season. And at Tiernanog, it's the Celtic Kitchen Party at 9 p.m. Finally, closing out the week on Sunday, it's Jonathan Jones at Timeout Bar from 3 to 5 p.m. Candlelight, the best of Hans Zimmer at the Spire starting at 6:30 p.m. Candlelight, Coldplay, and Imagine Dragons String Quartet at the Spire starting at 8:30 p.m. And a candlelit carol service at St. James Anglican Church at 4:30 p.m. Also on Sunday, there will be a youth open mic at the Sesame Theater starting at 5 p.m. That wraps up your Friday forecast. If you have an event or concert that you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendars, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go or hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from Harmony Music Lounge's Origin Story Volume 2, a full-length album written, performed, and produced entirely by youth from Napanee and Kingston. From it, we'll listen to Gasoline by Brielle Banderson and Atlas Rossborough, a slow-burning alt-rock single that explores emotional overload, performed with grit and grace by two standout members of the youth band Sound Chamber, who were both in grade 9 at the time of recording. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Origin Story Volume 2 on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Gasoline here with us on CFRC 101.9 FM.
smell like gasoline. The fumes keep poisoning my dreams, and I wake up in a cold sweat thinking about you.
Local Lives here at CFRC 101.9 FM. Local voices power our radio station every single day, and you too can power up our programming by making song requests via CFRC.ca and clicking the request button or messaging us via Instagram at CFRC Music. Tell us your song requests and favorite shows you want to hear them on. We'll also play song requests on our pop-up CFRC on-demand programs while shouting you out and reading off any dedications on your behalf. Click the request button today on CFRC.ca. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Medicine Man, the third single from the Empties' upcoming EP. The song taps into their hard rock influences for a more energetic sound than they've ever done before. Follow the band at The Empties Music on Instagram to stay up to date for upcoming shows and their EP release. And don't forget to check out the CFRC 2025 Release Radar Listener's Choice Survey, happening now via CFRC.ca, where you can vote for your top 10 local singles and albums released in Kingston this year and enter for a chance to win great raffle prizes. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Medicine Man by The Empties on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Chances. Smell.
CFRC 101.9 FM's annual funding drive is now underway and running through December 31st. Donate today and get amazing CFRC prizes. For every $5 you donate, donors can also earn one more ticket for each of our raffle draws featuring prizes from wonderful local businesses including Agent 99, Atomica, Black Dog Tavern, Diane's Fish Shack and Smokehouse, Harper's Burgers, Domino's Pizza, Tango Nuevo, The Grad Club, Skin Fusion Spa, The Fun Zone, and Minotaur Games and Gifts. And don't forget to take our Release Radar Listener's Choice survey and vote for your favorite local artists that we air every day and enter for a chance to win even more prizes. Enjoy the benefits of helping CFRC support local music. Make your gift today via CFRC.ca. CFRC 101.9 FM, the Kingston Music Office, and our sponsors, Long & McQuaid and Modern City Taxi, are pleased to announce the 2025 Release Radar Listenership Survey is now open. Select your top 10 singles and top 10 albums and EPs released in Kingston this year by local artists, and enter for a chance to win $1,000 in prizes from CFRC and our friends at Long & McQuaid, KPP Concerts, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, The Screening Room, and Black Dog Hospitality. Show your love for local music. Get in on the action today via CFRC.ca, proudly supporting local artists since 1922. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Bad Dawn, a new single by local act Lake Porter. The new song is about facing the impossible and surviving it with the people who never leave your side. It's a story of loyalty and defiance, staring down darkness and choosing love anyway. As faithful as the sun to a new dawn, it's a reminder that no matter how bad it gets, we rise together. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Bad Dawn by Lake Porter on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
All night, it gets a little brighter. All day, it gets a little dark. I don't want to drink every day, it just feels the same. I pour my last shot right down the drain, and maybe I'll find my sanity. And oh yeah, it's right in front of me. And this time I had it all wrong, but the good days gone and the bad days dawn on me.
I'm way too comfortable living a lie. Swore to myself a thousand times, but who's keeping score?
Time.